We all have opinions. Welcome to Speaking Truth to Power, a podcast where we, the people, get to weigh in on today's happenings. Join us with your mind open for discussion on everything from the Constitution, raw society, law, interviews, and so much more. Powered by the law offices of Jason E. Taylor.
Hi, this is Jason Taylor. As you know, we like to do these podcasts on interesting cases that you might find both informative, entertaining, and perhaps even enlightening. The case I want to talk about today is one that the United States Supreme Court came out with their opinion last month, the month of June, and it's actually made up of three cases, and it has to do with the Title VII, 1964 Civil Rights Act. All right, and that act. Or that Title VII says it, quote, unlawful for an employer to fail or refuse to hire or to discharge any individual or otherwise to discriminate against any individual because of such individual's race, color, religion, sex, or national origin. So that's the that's part of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And there were some cases that were going on around the country that had to do with either employees who were fired because they were gay or an employee that was fired because they were transgender. And they were in different parts of the country. One case was in New York. One case was in, I believe, Michigan. One case was in Georgia. And these had reached the higher courts, the appeals courts, and they had different opinions at these different courts. And so the Supreme Court took in these three cases and said, we're going to settle this for all the courts and going forward, so there won't be that confusion across the country. And it's a great opinion, or it's a great case, or group of cases. One, it's obviously a incredibly important issue, but the justices really go at it with each other and kind of talk about what the process is for a court, because a court isn't supposed to make law, they're supposed to interpret law, right? And they kind of explain all that in this case, and I want to get right into it because it's pretty interesting. So I've kind of told you what Title VII is about. And the court says, knowing what the title's about in these three cases that came up, they said the issue is whether an employer can fire someone simply for being homosexual or transgender. So the part of the Title VII that we're dealing with here hasn't nothing to do with race, color, religion, or national origin. We're dealing with that statute as it applies to sex, right? And the court says the answer is an employer who fires an individual for being homosexual or transgender fires that person for traits or actions which it would not have questioned in members of a different sex. Sex plays a necessary and undisguisable role in the decision. Exactly what Title VII forbids. Okay, so they say you can't discriminate. The majority opinion is you cannot discriminate in hiring and firing, etc., employees based on whether they are transgender or homosexual. And the majority goes through a number of the processes that the court has to consider. In other words, is legislative history relevant? Well, the court says it's relevant if you can't understand what the statute says. In other words, if the statute's ambiguous and you're not clear, you might go back and look at what the drafters were thinking in some of the notes from the back and forth of creating the law. But they go on to say, but when it's clear, we don't try to make it confusing by going back and looking at the notes. In other words, you don't put the cart before the horse, right? If you can understand it and it makes sense, you apply it. And it's not the court's job to do anything other than the application of law, not as you wish it to be, but as it is. And they do. They're a lot more eloquent than I am, so I encourage you to read this stuff. It's great. But I want to hit a couple of the highlights and kind of talk about what the majority and the minority of the court are arguing about more particularly. And the and here's what the court says, the majority, about what their job is. The court normally interprets a statute in accordance with the ordinary public meaning of its terms at the time of its enactment. After all, only the words on the page constitute the law adopted by Congress and approved by the President. If judges could add to, remodel, update, or detract from old statutory terms inspired only by extra textual sources and our own imagination, we would risk amending statutes outside the legislative process reserved for the people's representatives. In other words, they say, hey, we look at what they were trying to say then and exactly what they said, and that's what the law is. And they said, and we would deny the people the right to continue relying on the original meaning of the law they have continued on to settle their rights and obligations. In other words, the court's job is not to reinvent things. It's just to understand them and state them clearly as the law that our legislators draft. So that's what they did in this case, and they said it's very clear, and that if sex is an issue in whether you are hiring or firing somebody, then it's outlawed by Title VII. And then they went and they looked at some other cases that the court has looked at in the past that would help them in understanding that. And one of the cases, it deals with where women had to pay more for their retirement account because they live longer. And by living longer, they would have to pay out more. So that case was paying into their pension fund. That was Los Angeles Department of Water and Power versus Manhart, where they said this statute that required women to make larger pension fund contributions was illegal under Title VII because it was discriminatory. And there was the Phillips versus Martin Marietta case that refused, where Martin Marietta had refused to hire women with young children, and the court said it's discriminatory. And then there's another case, Onkel versus Sundowner, where a male coworker was sexually harassed by male coworkers, and they found that was in violation of Title VII. So the court points out how Title VII has been read more broadly. One could argue that the women who were hired with young children, that the young children was the primary issue, and men and women can have young children, but that's just not it. This was about them being women with young children. And the case with the women making the larger pension funds, you could make it about pension funds or about retirement accounts, but it's really about the women, right? And the guy who was sexually harassed by his coworkers, they said, well, probably in 1964, they probably weren't thinking men harassed by men sexual harassment. It was probably more men versus women. But the bottom line is it was about sex. And that's what the statute says. And so that's how they interpret it. And then they applied that here, and the court gives some great examples, and they do this on both the majority and the minority opinion, and I just want to hit a couple of them if I can get it right. I'll give you three quick ones. One example, an employer with two employees, both of whom are attracted to men. The two individuals are, to the employer's mind, materially identical in all respects, except that one is a man and the other a woman. If the employer fires the male employee for no reason other than the fact he is attracted to men, the employer discriminates against him for traits or actions it tolerates in his female colleague, right? So it goes to sex. Second example, if the employer retains an otherwise identical employee who was identified as female at birth, the employer intentionally penalizes a person identified as a male at birth for traits or actions that it tolerates in an employee identified as female at birth. This has to do with the transgender. And the last example from the majority I'll cite is that, and this is, they're obviously very bright people writing these things, but it's interesting. Imagine an employer who has a policy of firing an employee known to be homosexual. The employer hosts an office holiday party and invites employees to bring their spouses. A model employee arrives and introduces a manager to Susan, the employee's wife. Will that employee be fired? If the policy works as the employer intends, the answer depends entirely on whether the model employee is a man or a woman. Right? So it requires something about the sex, and that is prohibited by Title VII. And the court goes at great lengths to explain that it's simply applying the law. And I would argue that it strikes me in reading this that actually Gorsuch may not be happy with the law. He may not like what it says, but that's not his job to like or dislike. His job is to apply the law as it's written, and that's what he does. The minority then goes on to say, there is only one word for what the court has done today, legislation. The document that the court releases is in the form of a judicial opinion interpreting a statute, but that is deceptive. And then they go on to argue that the majority is wrong and that there was no way that that's what the drafters meant to do in 1964, and that the being transgender or gay has not to do with one's sex, but preferences, and that it therefore doesn't fall underneath the statute. And they do a great job arguing their side of the case. And the minority says the issue is if an individual employee or applicant for employment shows that his or her sexual orientation or gender identity was a motivating factor in a hiring or discharge decision, for example, is that enough to establish that the employer discriminated because of sex? Or put another way, if an employer takes an employment action solely because the sexual orientation or gender identity of an employee or applicant, has the employer necessarily discriminated because of biological sex? And they say the answer to those questions must be no. Right? So they take a completely different opinion and they go on and they make examples and do the very same thing. And my last thing about this is while I agree with the opinion of the majority and I think it's appropriate, and I was trying to think of how can I give another example where it might be a parallel, and that is, imagine defamation, right? Defamation is they're made up of two things, either libel or slander. It has to do whether written word or spoken word that you say bad about somebody else that's not true, right? A defense to defamation is truth, right? But if you do that, if I say something or write something horrible about you, and I do it and it's not true, and I knew or should have known it wasn't true, then you may have a cause of action against me for what I've done because I've hurt your character, right? I've caused you a damage. And there's a law about that, right? There's a defamation law. Well, at the time that was drafted, there wasn't texting, there wasn't email, and there wasn't Twitter. So one could argue that, you know, if I defamed you via Twitter or email or texting, you might argue, or I might argue, hey, that's not what the drafters were considering. These things didn't even exist then, right? You know, they were talking about when you pen that negative thing or when you type that negative defaming remarks or speak those defaming remarks. They were never thinking about, because it didn't exist at the time, texting or email or Twitter. And the bottom line is, the plain language is, that I defamed you by written word, even though it was in a form of writing that didn't exist at that time. Okay? If the courts were so limited that they couldn't think beyond what was thought at that time, what would we get done and where would we go? I think the plain language of the statute has been appropriately applied, but I'm impressed, as always, with both sides of the court, the majority and the minority, as I always am. Regardless of which side wins out, they do a great job analyzing and writing, and more often than not, I think we get to the right answer, as we did here. I hope you all have a great day. Take care.
Thank you for tuning in today as we are Speaking Truth to Power, where it's about the truth, not titles or party affiliation, just the cold, hard facts. We invite you to email us topics you'd like to hear discussed. We welcome all feedback. Find us online through all social media platforms and at thelitigator.com. That's thelitigator.com. Until next time, take care and stay vertical, friends.